Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome back to Defrag. And this is the Thanksgiving week show, here in America anyway. And so I'm at home building a Lego Millennium Falcon. You're doing tech support still, I imagine.
I'm constantly doing tech support.
Yeah.
Especially when family gets together. I've essentially told them, okay, don't call me on the phone. Don't text me about these problems. Just bring me your problems. Yes, I'm King Midas or whatever.
Yeah.
Bring their power cords too. Everybody forgets power cords. I don't understand that.
Yeah. They think you have every power cord there is, and you probably do.
Well, sure, but that's beside the point. I get all the family together and say, okay, tell me, what is the worst thing that's happening right now? And then I triage all their failures and
so you stack rank family by how
absolutely
bad their problems are. That's
absolutely
nice. That's
yes.
Add a little layer of Microsoft to your home family life. And this year, this is freaking me out of the corner of my eye. So I got to get over that. All right. So let's get started here. We haven't had a lot of time since posted the last show, but we do have a comment here from WinDev who mentioned about our product key issue. Assuming you can guess the correct SKU of Windows, probably home on laptops, you still need the media to do the install. Of course you need the media. The product key on the laptop does not use the media that Microsoft provides via MSDN, Retail or Enterprise. You need to get the media from the OEM, so the product key works. Gov.
So there is different media, so to speak, from the OEM. It's a volume licensing thing.
Yeah.
The issue is that you can't use the OEM key that was printed on the bottom of a machine and take it to a different machine and use it and have it actually work. The most ideal thing to do is, of course, get the product recovery disk from the OEM.
Sure.
And use it to restore that way. But you should be able to take non-retail, so retail is different from the OEM media in the sense that it reads special information from the computer's BIOS to say, is this the right thing that I can activate on?
Yeah.
And then those keys are also separate from retail keys.
Okay. First question today. I'd like to know the exact instructions for moving the page file from one disk location to another disk in Windows 7, from an SSD to a non-SSD drive, which I would have thought you'd want to go the other way around. But either way.
Yeah, I would have thought you'd want to go the other way, too. I can show you how to do that. I don't have multiple disks in this particular laptop, but the operations are the same. You just go to Computer, click on Properties. I warn you, this is deep. We have buried this stuff deep. It's under Advanced System Settings.
What, you don't want, like, the average consumer messing around with page files?
I don't even want them messing around in this screen, frankly.
Yeah.
And you go to the Advanced tab, and you go to the ever-wonderful Performance, because, yes, it makes sense being there.
Yeah.
Click on Settings. Click on Advanced. Click on Virtual Memory, because, again, this makes perfect sense to everybody.
This is nested Advanced tags.
The virtual memory, you can set where you want your page files. You can tell the system to turn it off. If I had a different disk here, I could choose that disk. I could set no paging file on this drive instead of paging file on the other drive.
Yeah.
Ideally, you do want to leave it as automatic for all the drives, or at the very least, if you do move it to a different drive, keep it a system-managed size.
Yeah.
So it's able to grow.
I would imagine that the person who's wanting to do this is probably thinking about this because they have an SSD that's kind of small, and they're running out of room.
Probably.
And what is the normal page file size? 3 gig?
So it actually varies depending on how much RAM that you have. The general rule of thumb is 1.5 times the size of RAM. So if you have 4 gig, it's going to be 6 gig page file.
All right.
The next question you're probably going to ask is, what page file should I have?
Yeah, how low can you go before, you shot yourself in the foot?
You want, at the barest minimum, and this is for specific situations, the page file is used when the system bug checks in order to save off the dump file. So you want to have a page file, usually, at least the same size as your RAM.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is a lot harder to answer of, if I want it to be smaller than the RAM, if I don't care about the memory dump or anything like that, what size should it be? What you want to look at is actually profile your system. Use it every day, check the page file size, use it for a week, use it under normal circumstances, and then technically you could, you know, lock your page file at that size plus, you know, another 200 or 300 meg for growing. You know, you don't want to run out. But if you really are caring about drive space and you don't want to let it grow unconditionally, then you actually have to look at what your machine is doing.
And, you know, if you move it to a slower drive, if you take it off your SSD and move it to a platter drive, what are you going to have any kind of performance issues or anything that, you know?
It should be relatively minor, but again, it kind of depends on what you're doing on the machine.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing a lot of Photoshop, for example, you might want to reconsider putting it on a platter drive. You might want to get another SSD and have that as your page file drive.
Yeah.
But really all kind of depends on what you're doing. I think under most circumstances, unless it's a super, super slow drive, you're not going to notice much difference.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. Today my hard drive got into a state that no amount of disk checking or startup recovery can resolve, so I attached another disk, installed Windows on that, recovered the files from the old disk, all fine. The problem is there's one directory I had encrypted, and of course the contents of the recovered files are gibberish. Is it possible, since I have full access to the disk, and I know the password, the account password that it was encrypted with, I can still decrypt it somehow?
Short answer? No. The longer answer as to why it's no is that the password doesn't matter. When you're using EFS for encryption, it's actually the keys that are associated with your user account.
Yeah.
You don't have those keys anymore, which is why when you're actually going through the encryption wizard, it tells you to back up your keys.
We're back to that again. I remember a previous show where I didn't back up my keys and I lost some data because of that.
That was for BitLocker.
Yeah.
But it's related. EFS is related to BitLocker. They're not the identical technology.
But if it asks you to keep some keys, it's probably a good idea. And, you know, I now have a thumb drive that I've taken my label maker and wrote keys, and so that's where I'm going to put my keys from now on.
Perfect. You'll probably want to back up your thumb drive as well, because they're not known for the best reliability in the world.
So is there anything this person can do? Is there...
There are recovery specialists that may be able to get back some of the data. There is nothing inbuilt. We don't have any kind of back doors or anything like that. There's no magic command to unencrypt the files. It's brute force decryption at that point.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like you're talking about some money there if they're having someone
take
a look at
that. It is some money, and it's unfortunately they can't even pay us to do it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So next question. After clicking sleep or hibernate in Windows 7, my computer loads for a while and then goes into sleep mode. But 1 second later, it powers back up. The event log has no errors and no warnings appear when it comes back out of sleep and hibernation. I kind of have the same problem every once in a while on this laptop. Sometimes I sleep it, shut the lid, stick it in my bag. I get home, go to take it out, do some work, and it's like 1,000 degrees and the battery is drained. So what happens there, and how do I troubleshoot that? How do I try to get that to stop happening?
So you probably have something called enable wake timers to be turned on.
Yeah.
What I do, and I've had similar problems with different machines in the past, is there are BIOS settings. You can go and check, and it'll say, you know, enable wake timers, set them to disable.
Yeah.
There's an OS setting. If you click on the battery icon, you get a more power options. And, of course, we love burying our information.
Well, it keeps it out of the way.
Yeah.
It keeps it clean for you.
Click on change plan settings. And then click on change advanced power settings. And then under sleep, there's an option called allow wake timers. You can set those to disable. I leave mine on because I don't actually sleep this machine. I hibernate it.
Yeah.
If you hibernate the machine, it's staying off.
Mm-hmm.
I know you don't like to hibernate your machine.
I don't tend to.
So you can do that, and it should keep your machine off. Now, if you actually want to take a look... at what might be turning on your machine, there is a power CFG function that you can use, wake timers. So I've got no active wake timers on the system. You can also use the command requests, to see if there's anything that might be keeping the machine awake. There's another one that's called Last Wake. Mm-hmm. It'll see, you know, what was the last thing that caused the machine to wake up from sleep. So the Power CFG command is
What are some of the typical things that might wake a machine?
For example, if you're running Media Center on your system and it's set to schedule to go for guide updates,
it
might be set up to wake up and get the guide updates and then sleep again. Windows Update could force it to come back up from sleep, get updates, and then come back down again. There's actually a lot of different things on your system that could force it to come out of sleep.
Okay, so if you change that, if you disable it, which I might do tonight, just see what happens, and then you're not getting your guide or...
Well, at least not when you
are... When you expect it, or
right.
Not every night. It's not performing some function. At least you know that might be what happened.
Right.
You can set it back. Okay, cool. All right, next question. I'm setting up a home network, and I have a laptop which connects to the Internet wirelessly, and that works fine. I have a desktop connected to this laptop by an Ethernet cable, which I'd like to access the Internet with. In the past, I've used a different laptop to do this and had no problems doing so. Both computers are on Windows 7. I've tried setting up a home group and disabling Windows Firewall, as well as restarting both computers. I can share data, but my Internet connection cannot be accessed through the desktop. I've looked at the Windows ICS resources, but it was no help. What's the best solution for this?
Well, addressing a couple of things that they've done on those particular machines. One, turning off the Windows Firewall. Depending on how they did it, if they disabled the service, you can't do that. You have to actually leave the service running, and we really don't recommend ever turning it off. ICS will work if you have two NICs, two network interface cards in the computer, but I find that it's a lot less useful than simply buying an external router.
Yeah, just get a router.
Just get a router.
The
really nice thing about the router is that it'll do NAT on its own. You don't have to configure the ICS machine to do NAT. Your main box is not connected directly to the Internet, mm-hmm. so you have another layer of abstraction from your home network being nicely separated out from the Internet. Most home routers nowadays have Internet intrusion detection.
Yeah.
So, it is doing all the work to protect your internal network. Why leave your machine running all the time just to serve as an ICS?
And if the laptop has a wireless connection, then obviously there's a wireless router somewhere in the house anyway.
Perhaps.
Just get a USB, wireless device, plug it into the back of that desktop, and you'll be fine too.
Yeah. I mean, all of the routers that I've ever had, I tend to prefer Linksys routers.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good ones. I'd go dual band, simultaneous, and they're pretty reasonable.
Interesting. They look better than my router. I don't see the fishing trawler antennas on top.
No, not on this one. The earlier, but before Cisco bought them.
Yeah.
They had them, and I mean they're great. They can take the DDWRT firmware.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of additional features that these have that you just won't get out of a standard Windows box.
Yeah.
Because it's not designed for it, right?
Yeah.
I really like just having a separate router. It's a lot easier to troubleshoot issues as well.
Yeah, I'm using a Rosewill router, the cheapest router I think money can buy right now. But before that, I had a Linksys gaming router with mm-hmm. the tattoo on the side, and it was really cool. I liked it. I even liked all the antennas on it. I like that look, so, yeah, cool.
Well, the nice thing with antennas, at least if they're removable, is that you can, attach larger ones.
An extended one.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, next question. When I boot up my system, I get a strange result. I get a blank screen before the desktop comes up, and it remains blank for about 1 minute. And then the desktop shows up, and all my startup items begin to run. I've tried turning it off with msconfig, and the same thing happens. After about a minute or so of dead screen, any idea what's going on? We were talking about this before. Suggestion there, update video drivers.
Usually that's what's happening. Is something with DWM is reinitializing the video card, or the video card is reinitializing itself for one reason or the other. You can try updating your video card. The video card drivers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you go buy a new video card right away anyways.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is set it back to an inbox driver. So, roll back, and it might be just a particular version of the driver that you have installed that's not doing very well.
Yeah.
If you roll back to an inbox driver and you remove the ISV driver that was installed, then you might actually get updates from Windows Update. So there's this nice happy medium. You'll have drivers that came with Windows in the box.
Mm-hmm.
You have IHV drivers from Intel, from NVIDIA, from ATI that you go to their website and download. And then there's other drivers that you get through Windows Update. They are kind of a hybrid in between the ones that you get from the IHV and the ones that are in box. They're like the ones in box, except newer, usually.
Yeah.
Updates, but they don't tend to have all the extra fancy stuff that you get from the website.
So, another thing that would be a good way to troubleshoot this is, has it always done this, which is left out of the problem here? Because if it's always done it, you might have a bad video card.
Yeah.
I've got a machine at home, my gaming PC, and when I boot it up, it boots up and it runs for a minute, and then it goes to a black screen, comes back on, goes to a black screen, comes back on, it's fine, never does it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a video card, because, I mean, it did it after I installed Windows 7, so it had, you know, the problem there.
Mm-hmm.
It did it after I've updated the video card drivers. So it might just be a bad video card, too.
Yeah.
So something to look back and
especially
see how it's working.
Yours is a homegrown machine, isn't it?
Yeah, I build all my own. I've never had a name brand desktop at home.
Well, that's true. I mean, for desktops, I don't have anything name brand either.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point?
I built my first 286, and I've just done it ever since because I just like to do it. All right, next question.
I bet you still don't have VESA cards laying around, though, do you?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff laying around. I got a Timex Sinclair laying around, so, yeah, it's everywhere. I installed Windows 7 on a new PC. The account created during installation is used for demos, and thus we don't want it to be an admin. I enabled the admin account and made the demos account non-admin, but now I can't see the demo account when starting the PC. I only see administrator. What can I do?
When I first saw this one, I'm thinking that they actually disabled the account. They didn't actually remove it from the admin. So the UI that they're generally talking about is here. You know, you can see multiple accounts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have an admin account, I have my account. What they probably did was they either removed it or they didn't properly remove the user from the admin group.
Yeah.
If they disable the account, it won't show up on the start menu. What they really want to do is go back to that screen and see if the account is still available. Another area to see the users, which I actually prefer, is under computer management.
And so you went to start, computer, right-click
manage. Right-click on the manage local users and groups. So, you know, I have the users here. My admin account is my administrator account is disabled. They may have not actually properly removed their local account from the administrator group. So you can see what groups is assigned to. You know, my admin account is assigned to administrators. If they just disabled it, it won't show up properly.
Yeah.
So they can go in there with the administrator account, check it out, re-enable their other account, and remove it from the users, from the administrators groups, and you can go in there and remove the account and make sure that it still exists under users.
Cool. All right. Next question. All of a sudden on my Windows 7 machine, it shows a floppy disk drive A, although the machine physically doesn't have a floppy drive and never has. How did this happen, and how can I remove it? So this is something that you set in BIOS. Usually if you go into your BIOS,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's an option there. It says, do you have a floppy drive, enable, disable?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently this got triggered in there, so just go into your BIOS, which is probably F2 or some
F1,
other...
F1, delete, F12.
It depends. Just look on the screen. which, you know, I had a problem with a machine where it wouldn't pop on the screen for a while, like after it bypassed that, so I had the hardest time trying to figure out which key to hold down to get into the BIOS. But you can always search for it, too, if you can't figure that out. But, yeah, you go into the BIOS, and it'll be a function in there. So just disable that, and it'll get rid of it. Any idea how it might have got triggered on?
I mean, usually...
The motherboard battery went bad, or...?
Usually, you have to be kind of purposeful in order to turn it on.
Yeah.
It's possible that he installed some piece of software that changed the device settings and made the floppy drive show up.
Yeah.
Installed some other driver that's emulating a floppy drive. You know, if he installed maybe a CD-ROM emulator, that may have done it. I've not seen drives spontaneously show up before.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be kind of interesting to take a look at his machine.
Cool. Okay. Another person says, I just did a clean install of Windows 7 64-bit. I have a Microsoft Ergo Keyboard 4000, use the calculator key a lot. Previously, I could hit it and get multiple copies of the calculator pop up, but now it only shows one copy of the calculator. I tried adding a shortcut to the calculator app, but it has the same limitation. How can I open up a new copy of calculator? So you could always, you know, shift-click on the icon down mm-hmm. below, but for using, and I wonder if you could hold shift and hit the button on the keyboard.
I don't think one. that has any effect on it. I tried this. I've got a similar keyboard in my office, and I tried it out, and I can get multiple calculators showing up continually. So it'd be, again, this is an interesting problem. I don't quite know why it's being limited to one calculator.
So maybe uninstall and reinstall the software that came with the keyboard?
Yeah, he could install the IntelliType software if it's not already installed.
Yeah, so I'd give that a shot. Uninstall it, reinstall it if you have to. And, that's haven't seen that one before, and we couldn't recreate. So
I couldn't recreate it. You could, the user could always check the event log and see if there's anything showing up there whenever they hit the calculator key. The other one would be, you know, if I was trying to diagnose it, I would set a debugger up, and whenever calc.exe gets executed, I could at least tell, you know, is the process starting up and then dying?
Yeah.
Or, you know, is the process not even being created at all? You know, that's kind of how I would look at it. But again, I'd be needing the machine in front of me.
Sure. All right. Pick of the week. Pick of the week time already. So, this is an interesting one that I saw. It was on Steve Clayton on the Next site. And this is a presentation that Steve Batiche from Microsoft Research did. Thinking Digital. So it was over in the UK. Very, very interesting video where he talks about like the last 10 years of projects that they've worked on. And he shows some of the things like from the Vision video. Mm-hmm. And you know, you watch.
Well, what's the Vision video?
The Vision video is a really interesting thing that Microsoft does every couple of years, where they, you know, this is how we see technology going.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a recent one that came out not too long ago. But he was referencing the one that came out before that Ian Sands worked on. And they had a wall with, you know, little kids drawing on it. And there was like one little kid who was, you know, in one classroom on the other side of the world. And you watch the Vision videos, and you're kind of like, yeah, you know, where did they come up with this? And is this something that we'll really see? And he talks about some of the technologies that they worked on to get them to the point where they said, yeah, this is something that we see happening sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting stuff. I mean, a lot of the things that Microsoft does not get credit for is the innovative research that they do on, like, imaging systems and displays and it's just really interesting. I've never seen any other company working on this kind of stuff.
Well, have you ever seen like a Surface that, you know, any end user could actually play with? Have you ever seen one in a store or in a mall or anything?
Yeah, I've seen them all over the place.
Really?
But I go to places where they have them, like the hotels. I've seen one, I think it was a Hilton hotel that I saw one in.
Mm-hmm.
And have you been into a little place called the Hard Rock Cafe?
Here in Seattle?
Yeah, any of them. I mean, they've got surfaces all over the place.
Last time I went to a Hard Rock was down in California a few months ago, and I did not see one there.
Well, you need to look harder because...
Well, that's...
Yeah, Hard Rock Cafe has just completely embraced all kinds of Microsoft technology.
Cool.
So they've got Deep Zoom stuff. They've got a wall that you can go up and play with. I got some videos. I went over the one in Seattle just to, you know, took a camcorder with me just to see what they were doing there. And they're always doing something really interesting. So, and the cool thing with Hard Rock Cafe is they've got so much content that, you know, it's just whatever they can dream up. It's just like... looking at all the different instruments and clothes and stuff that they have through a Deep Zoom interface, really interesting. And I think Power Pivot, too, the Pivot application has, or at least it used to have, a library of Hard Rock catalog materials. So, yeah. But this is an interesting video. How long is it?
It's a half an hour.
Yeah, so half an hour and some really interesting hologram stuff. Here you can see they're scanning a page that shows up on the screen here.
Now that is cool.
Transparent display. And the cool thing here, he's not touching that screen. It's a gesture thing. Mm-hmm. So he's just doing it in space and the camera's looking
very at Minority
him.
Report.
Yeah, this is another one where because he's looking through the display with a camera on the other side or with Kinect, mm-hmm. it tells where his head is and it knows to move things
based.
Around. Yeah. So, very cool. So check it out. You'll love it.
That's a very cool augmented reality kind of thing, that... MSR is doing. These guys are brilliant people.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the smartest people that we can gather from around the world.
There are 1%. So
they're the 1% of the 1%.
They are, yeah. Yeah, and especially Stevie B. I mean, watch this guy. Stevie is a mad scientist wrapped in a giant brain. And his applied sciences group is not your typical section of MSR. I mean, he's doing his own stuff. He's leading his own team. Some of these videos you see, Benko makes an appearance and they'll be doing something in the background. But, yeah, these guys are working on some stuff that's very interesting, very forward-thinking.
So, tell us if you want to see more of this kind of stuff.
Because we want to go over there and poke around and see what Stevie B has got in his desk drawers.
Well, I'm sure some of our viewers would be, interested in some of the stuff that they're doing over there. And
yeah, absolutely.
I know I'm interested in it.
Yeah, I want to know more. All right, so that's the show for this week. We'll see you next week. If you want to send us an email, you can write defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave us a comment in the show notes or email us. We prefer the email so we can go back and forth if you have a problem. And we'll see you next week.
Have a good turkey day.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.